Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 29th of Elul. Now, I know that I usually try to avoid repeating Meshivim too often. And I'm trying to get a spread and trying to do all sorts of things to make this not a particular, like not a study just of Rabbi so-and-so or such and such issues, right? So I have to almost make a conscious effort not to take Gittin issues, even though those come up very, very often. Among the Tshuvot, apparently, I think, because that was an area of Jewish law that was always under the control of Meshivim, so it came up a lot for them. But I don't want to get too stuck in any one thing, so, and I'm not seeing enough Tshuvot to say what is or isn't a representative sample. All that is a long introduction, because today we're going to study another Tshuva of Rosha Feinstein's, even though the last time we were together, which was the 26th of Elul, we had a Tshuva of Rosha Feinstein. So the fact is that Rav Moshe Feinstein has tremendous numbers of tshuvot, many of which are interesting and productive to study and fit the time frame, meaning he wrote often at a length that made it easy to present it in this forum. So for today, we're going to study another one of Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuvot. I think I had a hard time. It's 29th of Elul. Let's remember, it's Erev Rosh Hashanah. So if you're listening to this, I appreciate it because you're taking time of your Erev Rosh Hashanah to learn together with me, and I appreciate that. And I also thought that maybe because Erev Rosh Hashanah, maybe just because it was the second Rav Moshe in a row, we would take on the kind of issue we wouldn't ordinarily take on, because Shu'at Igrot Moshe also has a section on Kodshim and Tarot. So Kodshim and Tarot, let's remember, are the areas of halacha that deal with sacrifices and things having to do with the Beit HaMikdash, and then the laws of ritual impurity and purity around who can go into the Beit HaMikdash and who can't, and all sorts of related issues to that. So in Chelek Aleph, Siman Yud Bet, of that part of Igros Moshe, there's a tshuva that Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote on the 29th of Elul of Tav Resh Pei Tet. Tav Resh Pei Tet translates into 1929, so it's Erev Rosh Hashanah of 1929, which in America was only a few weeks before the great stock market crash of 1929, which was eventually going to lead to the Great Depression. But Rav Moshe is at this time still in Russia. He's in Luban. He's a relatively young man. He's 34 years old. And he's just studying Torah. And he's just writing some of the tshuvot that he later published in Igros Moshe, were written from back that time. And those often tend to be less focused on practical issues and less of the style that he eventually takes up. And so they take up much more theoretical issues and much more what we might call lumdish issues. So here he's in a correspondence with somebody who had asked him questions about issues having to do with kachim, having to do with sacrifices. Along the way, he makes some interesting points, and it lets us remind ourselves that part of being a true Torah scholar is not being confined to one set of halachic issues, because halacha and Torah are really intertwined in lots and lots of ways, and that all that comes together. So in reading and learning relatively briefly, I'll try to be brief, about these kinds of issues, some of it is so technical that, and we're not so used to it, that it becomes hard for us, but it's all part of a day's work for somebody who's going to become a posek. And that's a memory that I think, that's a reminder that I think many of us need to make sure we don't forget that when we ask questions and we think we can look things up and do research and whatever, we often forget that the people who give the authoritative answers on these questions have an ability to see the broad sweep of these issues in all of their contexts, not just the specific issue at hand. So the first element that came up in the tshuva was that the person writing him in the letter had asked him about the fact there's a Gemara in Yoma, Membet Amid Aleph, where Rav Yitzchok says, we know about two different shkitot. One is by a para aduma, and one is by the par that the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, sacrifices on Yom Kippur, which we know about from our Yom Kippur davening liturgy, even if we don't study those issues ourselves. So he says, Rav Yitzchok says, I know one of those a non-Kohen was allowed to do, and one, you know, it had to be done with a Kohen, and I'm not sure which is which. And then it turns out we have a debate. The Gemara says that there was a dispute between Rav and Shmuel, a disagreement between Rav and Shmuel. One said it was the pyre of the Kohen Gadol, the bull that the Kohen Gadol offers on Yom Kippur. And the other said, no, it was the paraduma, it was the red heifer whose ashes are used to help people ritually purify themselves so they can go after having come into contact with somebody who had passed away. And the Gemara tries to prove that Rav is the one who says that it was the para, because Rav Zera says you can't have a non-Kohen shech a para, and Rav says there that Elazar v'chukah shaninu ba. He says there have a pasuk that tells us that it's got a chukah, that it's a rule, that it has to be Elazar who does it. And then, so the Gemara says, but Rav knows that by his, the Kohen Gadol's pirate also says, it says Aharon, and it says chukah. Chukah meaning a rule that has to be followed. Gemara says, no, shchita lav avodah, that Rav held, and the Gemara goes on to Shmuel, and there's a whole discussion about it. So that doesn't end the conversation, but the shchita that Rav held, that shkita is not considered an avodah, it's not considered a service, and therefore when it says Aharon v'chukah, it's talking about service, but when it says in the Paraduma case that it says Elazar and a chukah, that's not about a service of the Beit HaMikdash, and therefore it can be me'akev. So the man who had asked the question, the man who had asked the question didn't understand why he needed a pasuk for it, because after all, if we're talking about shkita, he had said, the questioner had said, shkita is not really a service of the Beit HaMikdash. So, and the reason you know that is because the general halacha is, even though it wasn't commonly done, was that with many, many sacrifices, a non-Kohen could have done the shkita, could have done the slaughtering of the animal. The service starts with the collecting of the dam, and that has to be done by Kohanim. And therefore, another issue is that when it comes to issues of Kodshim, the Gemara's rule is that you need a pasuk to be ma'akev. You need a second verse. The Gemara assumes that this gets complicated about where it applies. It doesn't apply. That's part of what Rav Moshe is going to be struggling with here. The Gemara assumes that in order to, it's the way the Gemara, when the Gemara wants to derive a rule about Kodshim, about things having to do with sacrifice to Beit HaMikdash, it says that you need two psukim in the Torah about it. You need Shana Allah HaKatuv La'akev, in order to make it, not to know about it, but to make it essential, to make it a requirement, a complete requirement, rather than just a value or a good idea. So here, if it's a Shkita issue, then why should you need Shana Allah HaKatuv La'akev, I think is the question that was. So he says, you know, we see that by Kodshim, Sheshkita Kshira Bizar, that shchita is ordinarily allowed with a non-Kohen, and kodshim mikodshim yalfinan, and you learn kodshim from each other, that's a rule also about how we learn things. So that gets the whole area that most of us don't think about all that much, but I think is an interesting area to pick up, is the question of how do we derive things in halacha, and what are proper derivations, what are not proper derivations, because part of the important point, part of the of what we need to remember about halacha is that it's not what we decide it should be, it's what we can derive from previous sources. And the question of derivation then becomes very important, because if it's an inappropriate derivation or a wrong derivation, it shouldn't obligate us in any way. Ve'im kein, paro and para, right, the cases that we had in our Gemara and Yoma, so you can't say it's a din in shkita, it's a din in the animal themselves, that it's part of the kachim issue, meaning why not say it's a shkita issue, and then it doesn't need shana la vakatuv la'akev, it doesn't need a second verse to tell you that it's an absolute requirement, and so on and so on. So Rav Moshe says no, because even though it's a shkita issue, it's also a kachim issue, because we see it in other kachim cases. So then the man writing the letter had said, well, what about the fact that we need a kli by kachim? So that's going to be the next set of issues that we'll discuss. So a kli by kachim means the rule is that when the rule is not that in order to properly slaughter an animal in halacha, you need to use a certain kind of knife. The rule is you need something. Use something that's extremely smooth, so it won't catch on the animal's neck as the animal's being killed, and that it can be sharp enough that it will do the job within the right amount of time. But in kachim, there's a rule that it has to be a kli. So a kli in halacha is defined in certain ways, but it has to be an item that has been formed in a certain way and made and is a usable item. You need a kli b'kachim. So according to Tosos in the beginning of Chulin, and also in Ezu Mekoma, which is a chapter in Zvachim, so they seem to hold that unless you use a kli, a well-formed item, meaning you can't just pick something up and then, in an ordinary animal, if I pick up something, it doesn't have to qualify as a kli in any way, as long as it's sharp enough and I can do the job with that and get it done right, that's fine. But Tosus in Chulin Ezu Mekoma says, no, you need a kli. You need an item that has been well for, that has already been defined as a usable item in halacha, which varies with other halachic ramifications. And they seem to hold that that's even bidyeved. But according to one opinion there, they don't require what's called a kli sharet. The kli sharet is a usable kli, but it's also part of the service of the Beit HaMikdash. It's been dedicated to use of the Beit HaMikdash. So they hold that you don't need a kli sharet, but you need a kli. It would seem to be halacha not in kachim issues. It would seem to be halacha in shkita issues, right? Just that the slaughtering of kachim animals that belong to the Beit HaMikdash could be used for sacrificial purposes, seem to require a kli. And several commentators have pointed out that there doesn't seem to be an extra pasuk to create that ikuva. So the man who asked the question was, why would that be? Shouldn't it be that you need a second pasuk? If we saw in our Gemara in Yom, you needed a pasuk to prove that it was necessary, to make it a necessity rather than a preference. So there too, why didn't those require a second pasuk? So the Rav Moshe says, I think it's the opposite. There, it's a halacha about all of kachim, right? Tehudin bechol hakachim. So it's amina shudin bashkita sheba kachim. Hitzricha Torah shitehe shkita dafka bekli. That since it's about all kachim, not about a particular sacrifice or a particular act of service to the Beit HaMikdash, Rav Moshe says that he thinks Tosfos understood it to be actually a law about shkita. In other words, that the Torah made two levels, two types, two tracks of shkita. There is slaughtering ordinary animals for the purpose of eating them, and there's slaughtering sacrificial animals for the purposes of service to the Beit HaMikdash. We might intuitively say, oh, that's a kachim issue. That's an issue having to do with service to the Beit HaMikdash. Rav Moshe is saying that by virtue of the fact that this is a law, a rule of shkita, a ritual slaughter that applies all throughout kachim, it's not a particular korban, it's not a rule that has to do with an olah, with a burnt offering, an rule that has to do with the Yom Kippur service, that therefore it becomes a shkita rule rather than a kachim rule, right? That question becomes central to lots of determinations, right? If I have a rule that you need an extra verse for the purposes of kachim, then I need to know what qualifies as a rule about kachim. I might have thought that anything that has to do with kachim is a rule about kachim. Rav Moshe is saying no, because if it's an overarching rule that applies to all of kachim, and it's a rule within shchita, then Tosfos can hold it's actually a rule about shchita. So that's always interesting stuff to think about when we try to understand it. Has halachic ramifications. It doesn't have halachic ramifications for us because we don't, sadly, have a Beit HaMikdash, and therefore we don't have this question coming up in practical terms. But if I'm sitting in a Beit HaMikdash and I am one of the people, or we are people who get to determine or have to determine what rules apply to the service of the Beit HaMikdash, and there are kohanim out there who need to know the answers to these questions, so all of this becomes immediately much more relevant and much more problematic. So if I'm going to, or difficult, or necessary to make sure that we solve in the right way. So if I have a rule about ritual slaughter, I'm going to need to know what are the rules for how I can derive, right? Before I can even get to deriving the rules and figuring out the rules, I need to know what are the rules for how I derive the rules. So the Rav Moshe is saying, this Tosfos seems to be assuming that this rule, for all that it applies to kachim, is actually a rule about shechita and not about kachim, and therefore would not need that extra pasuk. So the rule of needing a kli, needing to use some well-formed item for the slaughter of ritual, for the ritual slaughter of animals that are going to be used for sacrifices, that's a rule about shechita, about ritual slaughter. It's not actually a rule about kachim. Whenever you have that intersection, that's where you have to ask that question. I remember, just take us out of kachim for a second to give us a breather. I remember years ago, people talking about Jewish history. What qualifies as Jewish history, right? If it happened to Jews, is that Jewish history? So if it happened to the entire Jewish nation, you might say it's considered Jewish history. What happened if it didn't happen to the entire Jewish nation? Is it Jewish history? If a Jew writes a book of history, is he a Jewish historian? Let's say, you know, if a Jew writes the history of England, is he a Jewish historian? So in that extreme case, the answer is probably no, because you don't want to just make it Jewish history just by virtue of the fact that the Jew's doing it. But let's suppose now, what about if a large segment of the Jewish population in a certain country completely assimilates or does their best to completely assimilate, and then they live their lives, and let's say nothing happens, there's no anti-Semitism, whatever, they just live lives as citizens of that country. Is that Jewish history? So these are all interesting questions that come up, and it's not a terrible analogy to what's going on here with this question of whether this rule is a rule about shkita, a rule about kachim. And for us, the nafkamina, the important difference will be when I want to establish such a rule, how much sourcing do I need of it? The Gemara tells us that when it comes to the sourcing of rules about kachim, about issues having to do with the Beit HaMikdash and the service of the Beit HaMikdash, I need not only a verse, but I need a second verse, le'akev, to tell me that it's absolutely required. So if any rule then that's a rule about kachim, we'll need that. But if I have rules that are actually rules about shkita, just shkita as it applies to kachim, then maybe I won't. And that's what Rosh is saying about that Tosfot. So that's not as the claim about kachim and shkita runs into this complication. Then if we know that if we're going to make this rule about shkita and say it's a rule about shkita, then why shouldn't it be a rule about shkita of chulin as well? Why not say that in regular animals as well, we need not just an item that is smooth enough and sharp enough, we also need an item that qualifies as a kli, as a well-formed item in halacha, having the status of a kli. After all, we have a verse with Avraham Avinu when he's about to do the shkita, when he's about to sacrifice Yitzchak at the Akedah, it says Vayikach et ha-ma'achelet. Right, so we learn from that in halacha that you need something that is not connected to the ground. Right, theoretically, that shouldn't be necessary. If all I require is something sharp enough and smooth enough, then if I found something connected to the ground that was sharp enough and smooth enough and I used it, it should be okay because the animal's neck has been sliced in the right way. So we derive from Avraham's actions at the Akedah that no, we need shechita betalush even with chulin. So how do you know that you don't need a kli, right? So you can say, and if you don't apply it to chulin as well, then it would seem to be halach in kachim because we have, you're going to make up two tracks in shkita, but if you, one of the tracks is shkita that applies to kachim, shouldn't be a rule about kachim. And then you'll say, well, it can't be a rule about kachim because shkita is actually part of kachim because shkita isn't actually a service to the Beit HaMikdash. As we've said, you can have shkita, you can have the ritual slaughter of kachim animals even done by a non-kohen. But, so the answer to that would be, meaning, so, we have this issue, the man writing the question wants to know why shechita b'kli doesn't need a second pasuk to be ma'akeh, doesn't need a verse to make it an absolute requirement. Moshe's answer was, because it's a halacha, it's a rule about shechita really, not a rule about kachim. This man says, well, if it's a rule about shechita, shouldn't it apply to regular animals as well? And if it doesn't, then it seems to be a rule about kachim. And then the man says, and if you're going to say to me, well, it can't be a rule about kachim because after all, shkita isn't a service in the Beit HaMikdash, but you could say that it's not a service, but the Torah sets up rules for the separate rules for the shkita of kachim, distinct from the shkita of chulin, distinct from the ritual slaughter of ordinary animals, such as you need it to be done in the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash. That's true of sacrifices and of the sacrifices that are defined as kodshe kodashim, that is the as an extra level of kodshim, so such as a chatat, certain kinds of sin offering, or an olah, those have to be done in the northern part of the beta of the azara. So if that's true, then it shows that you can have rules about the shkita of kodshim, you can have rules about the ritual slaughter of sacrificial animals, even if you hold, as we do, that shkita isn't a service that requires a kohen, and then comes back to our question, why don't we require a second verse to make sure that, to tell us that this is an absolute requirement? Meaning, Rav Moshe tried to say that Tosfos, and he will continue to say, that Tosfos holds that it's a rule in Shechita, not a rule in Kachim, but if it's a rule in, but that's odd because then it should apply to Chulin as well as the question, and don't tell me is part of the question, and don't tell me you can't have rules about Shechita that are really rules about kachim because shkita is not part of the service of Beit HaMikdash, because in fact shkita can be thought of not as part of the service of Beit HaMikdash, but has rules of there are rules about the slaughter, the ritual slaughter of kachim of sacrificial animals that don't apply to kulin. So maybe there are, of course, so how do we deal with all of these questions and that should then mean that the rule that the slaughter of animals, sacrificial animals, requires a kli should be considered a rule about kachim. So he says the truth is that there's two approaches in Tosfos about this question, the technicalities of which we can leave for another time, but it ends up that he holds that Rabbeinu Tam thinks, in fact, the idea of a kli is din in kachim and then would require a second pasuk, a second verse to be ma'akev, and then Rabbeinu Tam would in fact hold that if one slaughtered such an animal without a kli, with a good item that does the shkita right, but isn't qualified as a kli, the Rabbeinu Tam b'di'eved, if it had been already done, would say that it was okay, that's valid. And the second answer of Tosfos, who saw it as the din in shkita, would say it's puzzled even bidyevet. So all of that, I, again, brought up because A, it's Rav Moshe Feinstein, B, it's a tshuva that I found that I thought was appropriate in order, in terms of randomizing our selections and taking what we find and then building up a whole picture of halacha, just not and by encountering things that we're not used to and walking down paths we wouldn't always tread on our own. But it also points out issues of that are very important fundamental issues. You know, in science you have basic research and then you have the research that has practical ramifications, but very often without the basic research you can't get to the later ramifications. Here, too, this is the kind of basic research that we're talking about. The question of what halachos that we have are shechita halachos, or halachos about ritual slaughter, that some of which might apply to kachim, but are really fundamentally about ritual slaughter. And what halachos are kachim halachos, or halachos about how the service of the Beit HaMikdash. Here we're having Rav Moshe is saying you have two opinions in Tosfos about whether this particular rule, the fact that the shechita of kachim, the ritual slaughter of sexual official animals, needs a kli, needs a well-formed item, that fundamental question of whether that's a halacha in shechita or halacha in kachim, with the difference that if somebody used a non-such item and performed what otherwise would be a perfectly fine shechita, whether b'di'eved we can use it or not, is two opinions in Tosfos. He, Roshan then also said the rabbi agrees with the Rabbeinu Tam approach, that this is halacha in kachim, not halacha in shechita, and therefore, since there's no extra pasuk to ma'akev to tell you that it's an absolute requirement, that after the fact it would be okay. Problem with this, and this is part of how learning happens, is that you find another source or another idea that gets in the way. And then the question is, do you stick with your original idea? Or do you realize that, you know, you have to come up with another theory? So Rav Moshe is a stick with my original idea just plain away. Happens to be that there been Ephraim had shown that Tosfos does require a kli shares, even that opinion in Tosfos needs not only a kli, but a kli shares, an item of service in the Beit HaMikdash, which would seem to imply this has to be considered a service in the Beit HaMikdash, and therefore would seem to be halacha in kachim, because there's no halacha in shechita. Even shechita is kachim, that you need a kli shares, that you need an item used in the Beit HaMikdash, which says, no, that's for a different reason. That's because we want the slaughter to be mekadesh the dam, to make sure that the blood, which is going to be used as part of the service, and is going to be sprinkled on the mizbeach, we need that to already be mekadesh by the knife. So you could say to yourself, well, why do I care? So that'll always, it goes back to the basic practice of halacha, which is making sure that we ascribe everything that we do to its right reasons and its right sources, because down the road we'll never be sure of whether there might be an afkamina. So the slaughtering of an animal with just a kli and not a kli shares would be for Tosfos a halacha in shechita of kachim, but halach in shechita, and therefore you need a second verse to ma'ake, but it's ma'ake. But whereas the kli shares issue is halach in kachim, and that has nothing to do with the shechita, that has to do with wanting to make sure that the dam is mitkadesh, that we get the dam to be ready for sprinkling on the mizbeach, even from the moment of the shechita. I'm sorry, one part of that I got wrong is that Rabbeinu Ephraim had held you didn't need a kli shares, and Tosfos held you didn't need a kli shares. Not that they agreed with Rabbeinu Ephraim, they disagreed with Rabbeinu Ephraim, because Rabbeinu Ephraim doesn't think you need a kli shares, because he holds the other way about this issue. That's one issue that comes up in this response. A second, and then there are two more brief issues that come up that I think will also expand our understanding of Rav Moshe and the ways in which technical halacha and these kinds of issues that are basic halachic research were as much part of his learning as applying things in practice to the kinds of thorny situations that you see in other tshuvot of Rav Moshe's. So another issue that the man came up with was the question of whether you're not allowed to shech two animals at once. So Tosfos on Daf Lamed Bet talk about it, and seem to see it as a sort of mitasik issue, but it's different from, he thinks, when somebody's doing malach at the same time. The halacha is somebody who's shechting animals, especially for kashrut purposes, but shechting animals is not supposed to be doing any other malach at the time. It's paying attention to the shechita itself, v'shechat ota, and then there's a pasuk that says v'shechat ota v'lo ota v'chaverta. They should shech the animal, the korban, and not the korban and another animal at the same time. So it seems like it's just a gzeiros hakasav, like the Torah said so. So if we have halacha that you can't be doing anything else at the time of shechita, you might have thought that would be good enough to say, well, you can't be even shechting another animal at the time of the shechita. So why do you need this pasuk. And then he says the Rambam was like that as well. Rav Moshe says if you didn't read the Rambam well, which I thought it was fun to see that. He says he doesn't say it as straight out as like that, but he says you didn't look at the Rambam, because the Rambam says very clearly that those are the same issue together. The Rambam is understanding the Gemara to say that the pasuk of v'shachat ota, you have to shecht it and not another animal with it. Learn that the Gemara derived, the Rambam seems to say, the Gemara derived two halachas from that. One, you can't shecht two animals at the same time, and also that malacha, doing other work at the same time, would be a psul in the shkita, and that it all comes from the same pasuk. So that's the way Rav Moshe understands it, and he has it in the Mishnah Par as well. In fact, then he turns the question around on Rashi and Tosfos, who seem to see them as two separate issues, but we'll get into that. We'll leave that for another time, because he's going to explain it away. And then, because I want to get to the last issue that he brings up in the Tshuva, that there's a debate, and this is a little more practical in terms of Shkita today, because it doesn't require a Beit HaMikdash issue. It's a little more practical, but it comes up because there's a debate, there's a halachic debate about, in halacha, one is supposed to, when it's killing an animal, when it's supposed to shecht the entire two sibarim, there's the windpipe and the esophagus. Trachea and the esophagus have to be sliced through in a clean slice. And officially, one has to shecht the entirety. One has to just cut through the entirety of those two simanim. But in halacha, in many, many contexts, probably in most contexts, we say rubo kakulo. We say that the majority of something is like the entirety of it. So let's say somebody has shechted the majority of the two simanim, and then something happens at the end. Right? So there are five important halachas when it comes to shechita, which are whatever they are, but there are five significant ways in which one can mess up a shechita, and the shechita will be invalid. So let's say I've done none of those. I've done the shechita perfectly right, and I've shechted 2/3 of the simanim, and then something goes wrong. So that's a debate among the Rishonim. There are those who held that I can ignore it, because after all, the shechita is already valid. Maybe I just say, once there's a valid shechita, the animal has been slaughtered in a valid way. The animal is now officially, halakhically dead in a valid way. Animal's kosher. Rashi, well-known, held that it wasn't true. That unless one, in some clear way, stops the shechita, that even a problem in the miyut patri, it's called, in the last minority part of the simanim, would be a problem. The man writing the question, Rav Moshe, had wondered if that's true, then how do you get two people involved in the tumid of Yom HaKippur? On the morning of Yom Kippur, if you shech the tumid, then somebody else comes, and then at the end of the shechita, cuts open the neck more to make sure the blood fully comes out, and you get all of the blood out. The question was, doesn't that make it a shechita bishnayim for Rashi? Doesn't it make it two people doing the shechita? Because the second person who's coming at the end and is doing an act of shechita, so for Rashi, that miyud batra, that end part, we said, counts as part of shechita for Rashi. So Rav Moshe says he thinks it's not an issue because it could be that Rashi holds that those issues are about shechita, whereas this issue of what we're doing now in terms of getting the blood out is an issue of kutshim, and the shnayim, the two people can't do it, is a kutshim issue, and therefore, even though it's true for Rashi, if you mess up the shechita now, it'll be part of the shechita, but the idea that you can't have shechita b'shnayim, for those purposes, those are kutshim purposes. Therefore, we can say, though, this end part doesn't count as shechita. So Moshe just did a very delicate dance there. He said, yeah, you got a guy cutting the neck, and true, if he messes up the shechita here, Rashi would think the shechita itself becomes invalid, but in terms of the kutshim halacha, the halacha related to the Beit HaMikdash, that this service has to be done with one person and not two, this doesn't count as shechita anymore for those purposes, since after all, we're not doing it, since after all, the shechita is valid for most purposes if we had just stopped, so this is a whole different thing, and therefore you can ignore it in those ways. And in that sense, since he's not doing it for shechita purposes, he's doing it to get blood out purposes, it can be counted, Rav Moshe says, as if he's just slicing meat for whatever reasons, and therefore doesn't count as him partaking of the service. So, for the 29th of Elul, for Erev Rosh Hashanah, with Yom Kippur coming up, the Yom Kippur service sort of in our headlights, in our ability, we can see it out there, we can think of it, Rav Moshe reminds us of several issues of kutshim. A, I think, to me, most importantly, Rav Moshe reminds us that the process of halacha has many parts to it that most of us don't step into, don't get involved with, and sort of like leave off on the side, and yet they are the building blocks of later understanding other issues that come up. So if I want to understand Shechita properly, and that I need to do because anytime I want to eat meat, I need to make sure that my meat is kosher. If I want to understand Shechita properly, then I need to know the laws of Shechita. And now Rav Moshe pointing out, so some of the things that we might think of as laws of Kachim are actually laws of Shechita, and that can affect our laws of Shechita and our chulin animals in terms of what kind of a kli you have to use, and all those kinds of issues. So it is, and I hope it was reasonably clear and reasonably understandable, and I'd love to hear from you at grothst@gmail.com if you've listened this far and if you can give me feedback on it. But these are the issues that Rav Moshe was dealing with in 1929 as a 34-year-old man, I guess, with not so many Erev Rosh Hashanah issues of his own that he had to deal with and busynesses that he had to get involved with. This is what he wrote for us and left us legacy in terms of thinking about kachim, thinking about shkita, thinking about which about categorizing halachot properly so we understand their proper place for each one of them. And that is our responsibility for the 29th of Elul, for Erev Rosh Hashanah, a ktiva v'chatima tova to all. Have a good day.